Welcome to Eternal Darkness of Not So Spotless Minds podcast. There will be spoilers and swearing.
I'm not really feeling this line.
What's wrong with the line?
The circus just left town, bitch. How's it going, the movie?
You want to cast a name?
I just don't know why I'm not enough.
Why don't you just make your own shit? You know what they say, write what you know.
Hey, Jeremy, this is from the team telling you that the circus has left town, bitch. I said it was self-defense.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Eternal Darkness of Not Spotless Minds podcast. And we have a very special bonus episode. And with us today, we have Jenna Cannell. Welcome, Jenna. Woo!
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Very excited.
Great to have you. Great to have you.
Yeah.
You two should explain how this has come together.
Oh my gosh, I think if our listeners have to hear about how I just verbal diarrhea to everyone at Fright Fest anymore. I get very, I'm a very kind of enthusiastic person at the best of times, but I also have ADHD, which helps nothing because I have an ulcer and I have no propriety or anything. So when I'm in a very kind of like exciting environment, I kind of just I kind of did that at you, but if anything it was like a testament just how excited I was about your film.
Thank you. That's how I took it, if it helps at all. Yeah, we met at Faceless After Dark, which is a movie that I'm sure we're going to get into and talk about. Is a feature that premiered at Fright Fest in London. Mm-hmm. And that's where we met, and you told me about this, and we've been trying to schedule something ever since.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on, firstly. Listeners don't know this, but we've just had an absolute tech nightmare. So thank you so much for being so patient with us.
We made it. We made it through.
We got there.
It was genuinely very emotional. So Faceless After Dark is the movie that we're going to be talking about primarily. Obviously, you are very well known for some other films, Terrifier being a big one. You were in Renfield earlier this year as well, and you've done like a lot of other different projects. You're in WandaVision as well, which is awesome.
Thank you.
And yeah, like you pop up everywhere lately, and that's awesome, because I think you are very, very talented and deserve it.
Thank you so much.
How did you get into the whole acting thing from the start?
Oh man, we're going way back. Well, yeah, it started because I used to, if we're going way, way back to the true genesis of it all, when I was a kid, before I knew how to write, I would tell stories with these little like plastic figurine animals that I had. And I'd just be telling stories all the time. I had to do a lot of entertaining myself. And then when I learned how to write, that evolved into writing. And then I started taking acting classes and, you know, getting into drama and doing a little theater in high school. And then I got on set for the first time. And I just, you know, that was the gateway drug. And it's been, I haven't been able to quit ever since. I can quit any day I want, I promise.
You do have your fingers in a lot of pies.
Yeah.
You write, you do stunt work, all yes. your all everything
direct yeah
is all your own
yeah that's right.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And like, you know, and the way that you're able to incorporate all of those things in a project like Faceless After Dark, like, I mean, how satisfying is that for you to be able to collaborate?
Thank you. It's a lot of fun. I mean, so Faceless After Dark is directed by Raymond Wood, and he came to me and to Todd Jacobs, who I co-wrote Faceless with, and basically said, can you write a film that has a clown in it? Because that's what one of the financiers wanted. And my short answer at the time was absolutely not. No, thank you. One is enough. And so Todd and I basically tried to find a way where we could write something that was more subversive and, you know, kind of undercutting a lot of the tropes and taking it in a more meta direction and finding something that we would genuinely enjoy that was new for the genre, hopefully contributing something new. And so, yeah, so that's how, and because I was one of the writers on it, oh, I'm sorry, am I boring you, Ralphie? This is Ralphie, by the way, on my left.
Hi, Ralphie.
Who just so rudely yawned. Yes, you, hi.
For our audio listeners, we are going to be putting up a video at some point, but mostly it'll also be an audio one. So
yes.
That's a cat.
Yeah, additional subscribers to the video will see this.
You'll see a very gorgeous cat. It's beautiful.
He is a very beautiful boy. This is not actually my cat. I'm staying with a friend right now. This is one of her two cats who heard there was going to be a video, and this is his chance to be a star. Yeah. Anyway, so he will absolutely be stealing the show periodically, and he deserves to. What I was saying was that, oh yeah, there's the other one.
That's another one.
So because I was one of the writers on it, I could write in, you know, stunts that I am comfortable with and that I knew I'd be able to do and could enhance the character. And what's funny is that the financier who originally asked for clowns to be somehow involved ended up not actually being a part of the project. But once we turned that script into Ray, he absolutely fell in love with it and decided to run with it anyway. And I did end up doing a little bit of producing in terms of most of the actors involved or people that I had worked with before that I pulled on. I helped a little bit with some of the logistical aspects of things, but yeah, it was fun to work on. And I tried to, you know, I like taking turns wearing different hats on everything I do. And it's just a matter of, you know, doing enough prep that you're not spread too thin.
You wear several hats in this film. It's one of the things that I love about it. And like, I kind of say to, you know, people when I've been recommending it, like, don't look into it. Go in blind, you know.
Thank you. That's good advice. I mean
I don't even like to really watch trailers for films. Like, I will catch the odd one, especially if at the cinema and things, but like if there are particular actors in it or a particular director's in it or it's done by a particular studio, that's all I need to know, you know. Yeah. And I will be like, I'd rather just, because I feel like trailers and things lately just show so much. And
yes,
you know, and sometimes that is unavoidable, you know, have to make a trailer and, you know, there's only a very kind of like, first 20 minutes of your film before it takes this turn.
Yeah, Ray is very purposeful about how he's been marketing it, which I think is very smart. I mean, he's essentially marketing it as a home invasion thriller that takes a turn, which you can speak to. It certainly does. Oh, he tries to pull a sort of psycho in the middle where it's, you think it's going to be one story and then halfway through you suddenly find out that is not the movie you're watching. So exactly. I definitely agree. It's best to go in as blind as possible, especially because you're right that there are some people that know me from Terrifier and might think that this movie is piggybacking off of that. And it's absolutely not. If anything, we have some paying of homage to Terrifier. Mm-hmm. As a little bit of dunking on it, and as the kids say, but it's very much a different type of film. It's not the same subgenre at all.
No, not at all.
No, that's right.
Yeah, and I do as well. Like, I think that it's really smart the way that you've done that, you know, because...
Thank you.
I think because it's very easy to be typecast in a particular type of film or a particular type of role, especially in horror.
Yes.
You know, we are creatures of comfort. We like what we like. And it's, you know, we love Easter eggs and we love, you know, those kinds of things because we're just big nerds.
Yeah.
Okay. And it'd be so easy for you to kind of fall into that trap. And what you've done is you've kind of taken that control and you're like, okay, you want a clown movie? On my terms. Like,
that's right.
You know, like,
thank you. I love that.
No, it's fine. It's like, you know, you've given, hey, you wanted a clown movie, you know.
I'll give you one.
It's a threat, like 20, not a promise.
20 minutes of clown movie, and then suddenly, oh, wow.
But it kind of still is, it kind of still is, it's like the little, I don't want to say too much.
It is and it's not.
Hits, you know?
And we definitely do try to have those Easter eggs. Like, there's an appendage, I won't give away what it is, but there's an appendage featured in the film that actually is the same one that was in Terrifier 2 that we borrowed from Damien, the director. And, you know, Catherine Corcoran, who plays Dawn in Terrifier, who I'm very close with in real life, she has a cameo in this. So there's a lot of little, like you said, because people who love horror and love movies in general, we do love Easter eggs, but we tried to make it more a nod to the fans and more a little gift to fans, but something that you can still enjoy even if that's not your cup of tea at all.
Yeah, no, hopefully. 100%. And like going back to Fright Fest, Bruce, that, you know, is the world premiere.
Yeah.
And, you know, where I first saw it, Matt unfortunately had to leave probably at about 20 minutes because your last train was about to go.
Yeah, I had to head back to
Oxford. Oh, so you literally, you saw the beginning, but you didn't. Yeah. Oh,
I saw up to the point, actually, where the...
Don't give too much away.
Don't give too much away. When the third chap turns up.
Oh, you saw a bit more than
okay.
Yeah, I did. I know. I was watching it and I was like, oh, I remember that.
Okay.
Yeah, when he was getting, he's like, yeah. When
you saw the rest there's no now. Steak. You've seen the rest
yeah,
of it.
Oh, yeah,
now,
I've seen it all.
Yeah,
now.
Okay, fantastic.
No. All
fantastic.
Good. I've seen from your social media and stuff, it's been this absolute like steamroll of festivals and circuits and everything. And like, how, because I feel like at Fright Fest you had such an amazing reception.
Thank you. Yeah, it was incredible.
Such an energy, not just from me.
You were a lot of it. You were the backbone. You were the backbone of that screen.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it was insane. I mean, they put us on their main screen, which was that IMAX screen. It's a 50 foot, I don't know how to convert that to meters because I've been horrifically deprived of the metric system, but it was, you know, a 50 foot IMAX screen. That theater, they said, holds over 700 people, and it was mostly full. But, and then people throughout the rest of the festival kept coming up to me and expressing how much they loved the movie, which made me so, so happy. And it has been able to play at a ton of festivals since then. We're recording this on December 5th. It's playing at the Blood and Popcorn Festival in Oakland, California tomorrow. And it plays at the New York Horror Film Festival on Saturday.
Oh, sick. So,
and I'll be at the New York one. Yeah, I'm very excited about that. But we have a bunch more festival screenings coming up. But then, since I imagine you might want to know about this, it does come out on streaming sometime next year. So we do have a sales agent. So people will be able to see it sometime next year in their homes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
From what I've seen, you know, because obviously I follow you on socials and stuff, and like it just seems to be such a wave of positive response and really great articles and things. And
I mean, I don't post the negative ones, but most of them have been very positive. It does feel like most people really get what we're trying
it's
to do.
It's great on IMDb.
Oh, I didn't even know that. That's fantastic.
Yes, yeah, 7.3 currently. Which for a horror film, especially like a lesser, like, you know, it's not like a Halloween
it's not
or something.
Mainstream, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, like this is really good. And I always have a rule with IMDb and horror. I always add 2 points because like horror is so divisive. So for me, it's a 9.3, really. So
that's right. That's what we like to hear.
Damn right.
And I haven't checked Letterboxd, but I know that last time I checked, a lot of people were really digging it. And the people that don't like it, you know, I mean, it's art. It's subjective. Not everyone's going to.
I was going to say, like, how? Because it's. I would say because of a lot of the themes involved and it calls a lot of people out, has it been quite divisive? Like, because I imagine you've been getting a lot of response and things and been hearing things from your PR and agents and stuff. Like, have you noticed like any sort of patterns between different types of people? Like certain people really like it, certain people don't or anything like that?
That's a really good question. I've noticed a lot of the positive reactions I've seen have been from a lot of women and gender nonconforming people and from queer people, which is which is all fantastic. But that being said, there have also been a lot of men who seem to really dig it. It does seem like most of the people who don't like it are men.
Matt.
Well, I liked it.
So. But you liked it, and a lot of men do. So, you know, I'm not going to say that, that it's correlation, causation, you know. A lot of people do. So, it's, but yeah, I do think that there is, it depends on the type of horror fan, because like we've kind of touched on, it's a different subgenre. And it, there are some people, it's interesting because there are some people that don't like it because they feel that it's political, which is interesting to me because I think everything is political. I don't believe that art exists outside of politics. So I think if you don't think something is political, you're just missing the point, because literally everything is, either from what it shows or what it doesn't show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Good point.
And I think that the way that it's done is done in a way that I think is really relatable. Like for me, I think I said to you at Fright Fest, like, I know that she's a very gray area in morality, like, I mean, probably call it morally black and morally gray, but like at the same time though, like, yeah, girl, you know, like, you kind of
which I love
her, you know. Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's such a testament to your and Todd's writing, like in terms of just getting that finesse of this character doing really like implorable things, but equally, but
the guys deserved it though.
They kind of,
just completely,
I mean,
well, and it does get grayer and grayer as it goes on, and that's kind of the point. Because so Todd and I in real life are both very, very progressively leaning in terms of our views and our feelings and our ethics, but we never wanted the character of the film to be preachy in any way, and we certainly didn't want her to be, you know, out to make, she's not an activist, she's not a vigilante. She's just very mentally ill and very angry.
Yeah, and this is it, because I think it pertains to a lot of relatable subjects, a lot of relatable experiences.
You.
Obviously, the way that she deals with it is maybe not so relatable, but like...
Right, well, exactly.
But who hasn't fantasized, who hasn't gone like, oh God, I'm
fucking,
you just... know. Like, you know, especially...
Well, yeah,
like, the... Sorry, carry on.
No, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, especially if someone like myself who, you know, is female, is queer, and like, you know, I do get a lot of perceptions thrown at me. I do get like a lot of people kind of like coming out. I made the mistake of making a comment on Instagram the other day and I just deleted the comment because I was like, I don't care that much. It was a stupid like joke kind of thing, and everyone just takes everything so seriously.
Well, so I'm glad you bring that up, because to me, Faceless After Dark, a lot of my big takeaway is that I think most people are closer to snapping than we would like to believe. It's not that all of this happens to her and as a result she turns into something. The idea is, you know, kind of like it's kind of muddled and hard to hear, but in the call that she makes at the end that you hear in the voiceover, she's saying, you know, I was on the edge of the cliff and I thought they were going to push me, so I jumped. And so the idea
Yes, that's right. Yes, she did, didn't she? Yeah.
Fantastic line.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. But I think that's a big, I don't want people to listen to this and think like, wow, I don't want to go watch something that's got this agenda. It really doesn't. The idea is that you want to begin rooting for her. And if you're questioning whether you still should be, the further she goes, then that's great. That's totally the idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think anyone with like morality probably would. I think it's when you get the fans that are just kind of like, yeah, like she was right the whole time. And I think it's like, you're like, okay, cool. I will take a step back, actually.
Right. But, and it's also, I mean, that you also bring up a good point that there's kind of this obsession, because I've been dealing with this with some other projects that I'm a part of. There's this obsession with female presenting characters needing to be likable. And I don't think that's the case at all. I don't think characters ever need to be likable. I think we only even have that conversation when they're female presenting characters. What's more important to me is that a character that you care about what's happening to them.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like what you were saying, Kate, where you don't necessarily like what she's doing, but you want to keep watching to see what happens.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, again, it's one of those things where you can, it's not you how you would deal with it as, you know, yourself, but you can understand why someone might.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a huge compliment. And you know, we've also seen a lot of movies like this you know, like Taxi Driver was a huge inspiration, you know, Joker. Like there are lots of Joker type movies, King of Comedy, that are this sort of arc where you watch the protagonist become the antagonist, but we've just never seen that with this kind of protagonist.
We never really see that with a woman, do we?
That's what I mean.
No.
Yeah, okay, here's the line, you missed it, sorry.
we got there.
Yeah. Our listeners will not be surprised that I completely missed that. That's what you were saying.
You were right.
But yeah, at least I got the right conclusion.
You did.
But yeah, no, exactly. And I just think that is really important. I find characters who are in that sort of grey area so much more interesting than like the tried and true hero or the black out and out villain, you know. I think we've seen so much of that. Obviously, you know, we've talked about how like you co-wrote this and obviously you star in it and things. It's obviously a very personal project as well. Do you, when you sort of finished that writing process and then you were like making, like actually in production, like how much of like the creative control did you retain, or were you just quite happy to go, hey, you know, Raymond, I trust your vision, I trust what you got this, like I'm just going to focus on what I'm doing and that's that, or were you quite involved with it all as well?
So I do absolutely trust him, and I had to, I mean, partially in order to maintain a hierarchy so that things don't fall into anarchy, but at the same time, because as directors, Ray and I have very, very different styles. And so it was important that after I took the writer hat off, I just focus on being an actor and a stunt performer, because, you know, he had a vision from the moment he read the first draft, and I, you know, trusted him and wanted to make sure he achieved it, even if it's different from certain choices that I would have made. I mean, that being said, he was very big on making sure everyone involved had autonomy and could contribute to the story in different ways on set. Because I mean, the crew, our crew was incredibly inclusive and diverse. And I've never been on a set with that many queer people. And it was amazing. And it all felt very, a lot of people felt ownership, and that is credit to him. So it's, and it is a fine line, because I work on this when I'm directing my own projects as well, of you have to maintain your vision and you have to make sure that the ship is still steering towards the horizon. But at the same time, if somebody else has an idea that's better than yours, then the project has to be God.
Yeah. So I was smirked a little bit, because I remember the line where you say like, oh, let's give you autonomy, like, and I don't know if you remember that, but
it's a little bit of a
yeah, like a little bit, just made me laugh. And thank like you. Again, it's like the kind of things that, you know, oh, you're so much prettier when you smile and things, like I think a lot of especially females kind of go lol.
Right.
You know, like I was, how like the, you know, the humor in this is a real strength, I think, and I think
you know that was important.
Does shine through us. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it's I mean, there are some moments where I'm proper snort laughing, like
amazing.
Again, like I said this to you in Fright Fest, but the bisexual line, as someone who's bisexual, pansexual, like lols.
Yeah, I'm so glad
we are the worst. We are the worst.
We are the worst. True. That is the line that gets the most laughs at the screenings I've been to, which is hilarious. I mean, it was really important to us to have a sense of dark comedy, because I think a movie like this, if it took itself too seriously, just wouldn't be as much fun.
I think as well, if it did take itself more seriously, you probably would end up going into that line of preachiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, definitely.
You know?
Absolutely.
I mean, it was really great. And I, you know, Matt and I often sort of say that comedy and horror, they share bedfellows, because you have to have that timing. Yeah. And there's that, as you say, that dark humor, that gallows humor, I think, like as horror fans. I mean, Matt, you certainly have a
very dark humor.
like we have on our sort of main episodes, we have these really stupid segments that lend themselves a lot to horror, and we have like, we play like Would You Rather and things in horror scenarios.
Oh, amazing. Oh,
and
I love that.
Yeah, they can go to some weird and wonderful places.
I love that. But you're right, they absolutely hold hands, because both in order to scare someone and in order to make them laugh, you have to subvert expectations. It's just done differently, but it's the same goal.
Yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely.
I found the funniest bit was literally that third guy coming in for his, to have his steak. Oh my God, what an ass.
Oh, it was. So you're finding that funny, and I'm just sitting there, my blood's boiling at the stuff.
I find that scene very hard to watch.
Oh, it's so laughable because it's just like, what an ass. Nobody's like that, but I guess
they are, though. Unfortunately, they are. There are people like that. Like, you're not.
Yeah.
You're lovely.
That's why the people she encounters starts to get more and more ambiguous as to whether or not they deserve it, because I want to be very careful about that, because if you start out with people, or if you have people at all that are having done what she's doing to them, mm. and you never want it to be too easy to say, well, that's, no one's like that, I'm not like that. And that's okay if you start out at the beginning of, oh, I would never break into someone's house and harass them. And then as it goes, well, I would never, oh, have I ever sent someone a message that made them uncomfortable? Like, have I ever said something to them that made them uncomfortable?
Yeah.
Like, have I ever, you know, I wanted it to be, I think we all wanted it to become more and more difficult for the audience to maintain a separation from,
yeah, you know. And I think the fourth person especially blurs those lines, because like,
yes,
that was the goal, yeah.
Yeah, that. They're your neighbors. That's your neighbor. You know, that's
exactly
the person on the PTA. That's, you know,
exactly.
And you know, and the kind of comments that she makes on Jessica's account and things, you see that all the time.
Oh,
all the
right.
time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's, yeah, you're right. There is this kind of like, it's almost like the sort of severity of the sins, if you like, of the victims.
Yes.
Like they
Good
kind
way
of
to put it,
evolve
yeah.
as the insanity and the devolution of
Bowie's mind. Bowie's,
exactly. So you know, I think there's a really nice parallel there, and it's like a testament to the sort of journey that she's taking, and until we eventually end up where we end up. But like it,
yeah,
I think it's such an interesting comparison, and it does.
Thank you.
It's one of those films. I think it's one of those films that you can kind of just sit back and you can watch it for, you know, a film, and it's entertaining, it's gory and it's funny and it's got great score and it looks great and blah, blah, blah. But I think that there's actually so much take from it. And those are my, Matt, you know, these are my favorite kind of movies where I can
thank
watch
you
it again and again and yeah. like and see something new and notice something different and like, oh, and then that and then this and then, you know, that's the shit. Like Matt, he loves gore, so like Matt loves gore. Like Matt's a huge Terrifier fan, like he like absolutely loves that film, and it's like that the levels of gore. So you've got like this film, I think, appeases a lot of different types of audiences, you know, like I think
thank you
for everyone.
Amazing.
Talking about like the, as I mentioned, sort of like the sound and things, like this, the score and the soundtrack to this is so prominent.
Very cool.
It's almost like its own Thank character. And I wanted to know, because you know, there's a parallel between Bowie's journey and the extremity of the music.
Yeah.
And it's been discussed that, like, you know, eventually she sees what she does as like a work of art. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
No, I'm so glad you brought that up. Ray will be thrilled that you brought this up, because he's very proud of this journey in particular, where the music starts out as this kind of riot girl metal grunge sort of thing.
Love
and
that
it's
though.
Very, yeah. I mean, same. Excellent. But it starts out very, very messy and very loud, and then exactly. I mean, I love that you noticed that it sort of evolves into by the end we're hearing opera, because it's in her mind. Bowie's so far gone that now what she's doing is like her manifesto. It's her masterpiece. Mm. It's a piece of art, and it's very much more controlled and much more calculated. And she's so far away from reality.
Yeah, and Lacrimosa, no less. I mean, God, can you get more dramatic? It's a fantastic piece. So that was kind of like my question. I was going to ask whether that was something that you had decided when you were writing the script that was going to go. Is that something that Raymond brought in?
No, that was something I think that Ray found in editing. There were, Todd and I compiled a playlist of different sort of artists that we felt would be good companion pieces to the story. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think Ray found that sort of arc after the fact in editing.
It's a great arc. And the visuals on it as well. Like, again, I imagine that this
lighting.
Is
lighting.
Oh.
It's almost like Giallo type.
I was going to make comparisons to Suspiria and like Neon Demon.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. You know, like it's just visual assault, you know, like I would put this on that kind of like level of those films, because just simply because of how just overwhelming everything is, like it's just whoa, come at me.
Thank you. That was meant to, I mean, again, a lot of credit to our crew who did an amazing job with very little time and resources. But then at the same time, it's meant to mimic what she's experiencing in her own mind, you know, part of how mental illness feels or expresses itself to the individual. But then at the same time, I mean, we are, you know, we have these computers in our pockets now, and we're really not meant to be assaulted every day with all the horrific news of things that are happening around the world at any given time. And it's this blessing to be connected and to be aware, but at the same time, it's a lot. And our brains have not evolved quickly enough to really be able to process it at the level that it comes.
Yeah.
And if you're not in a stable place to begin with, if you don't have a good support system to begin with, that can really do damage.
Yeah. I mean, this is why people take social media breaks and take phone breaks, because it's just, you can't.
Absolutely.
Can't deal with all the time. That was actually something I was going to ask. It's like, because obviously, you know, I know that you're very socially politically minded, and you know, you were a very passionate person in those things. And but it must get a lot, especially, I mean, Jesus Christ, the last few years, this year alone. You know, like, how do you decompress from that? Like, how do you kind of switch off? I mean, presumably you don't go around killing people, so
Not that you know of.
I haven't been caught.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm have not murdered anybody yet. As of this recording. that's a great question too. I mean, being on social media is certainly a part of my work, and so I'm not at a place right now where I can turn it off completely. But that being said, I try to, as much as possible, use it more mindfully. Sometimes I'll literally just do what I need to do on there and then get off, so that I'm not caught scrolling for hours. That's certainly a part of it. I mean, just having a life in the outside world certainly is helpful. I practice mixed martial arts, and that's a great way to get anger out. I certainly need that.
Krav Maga.
I was doing Krav Maga for years. My gym recently closed, so I've recently just started doing Muay Thai. I'm probably mispronouncing it, because I just started. Right, get back to me.
Is it? I thought Muay Thai. Is Muay Thai not a drink?
It is a drink.
Oh,
Muay Thai is probably how I'm supposed to be pronouncing it.
Two types of people in this world.
Amazing. Muay Thai, I think, is probably the more accurate pronunciation. But so having that sort of physical outlet, I mean, I do a lot of hiking. You know, I think you just have to, there's a fine line to be balanced of staying aware and staying up to date, which I think is a responsibility, and balancing that with, you know, not overloading yourself and making sure that you're able to remain healthy. Therapy is also big. I highly recommend that.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And as well, like, I think you do, am I right in saying you do yoga and things, and like a lot of like mindfulness centering? Yeah, that's awesome. Like, no, that's really good, because like, she could watch this one, but like, Jen, are you okay, hon? Like,
no, I am not.
No, but you know what? I'm doing yoga and I'm drinking green tea, and everything's so good.
Like, I'm meditating.
Yeah.
Moisturized.
Manifesting.
Flourishing in my lane.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and art is really important for that too. I mean, I think we all need a form of expression, whatever that is, even if it's art for yourself that you never show anybody. I mean, that sort of thing makes a huge difference in being able to stick around in this world.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. Definitely. I mean, like, Matt, I mean, you're not really on social media much at all, are you, Matt? Like, you're like, you're
no, it's weird. I kind of dip in and out. I think otherwise it just gets too much. You just get sucked into it.
Yeah.
And you just stare at the phone all the time. It's just like,
yeah. It's tough, because like I was trying to kind of nod to earlier, I mean, it is this beautiful thing where we can create communities, and we can find out that there are people just like us in a way that, you know, I think is for the most part really cool, especially for kids growing up with it. But then at the same time, it can be dangerous because it gives everyone equal voice in a lot of ways, and that can be very dangerous.
Sorry, carry on.
No. I was just going to say, I think it just depends on how you use it. I don't think social media isn't inherently in and of itself evil, but it's a reflection of humanity. Take that how you will.
Yeah. Also, the conversation that you have, with the Southern gentleman, he's like, without mm-hmm. this, like, we wouldn't be here. And like, Matt and I would never have met without the internet. We met through a podcasting community. Before we did this, started the show, we'd never spoken on the phone or anything. We'd just taken the piss out of each other in the comment section.
Amazing.
We wouldn't be, here interviewing you. The internet does have such a wonderful thing, and information and learning, but it's having that responsibility.
Positive and negatives, isn't it?
Yeah, to make sure that you're not abusing it and you're not abusing others, because, no one deserves that, unless they're getting in your DM, sending you unsolicited dick pics.
There is a little fun fact here. Speaking of Easter eggs that I always love mentioning, there are a lot of these little flashing segments throughout the movie that are compiled of, news segments, notifications.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed, there are a series of there are dick pics that she's received kind of peppered throughout the film. Right. Anytime you see a dick pic, it's one that I've actually received that's in the movie.
Oh my God, I love that.
So think twice before you send those.
Matt, you're in trouble. No, I'm joking. That's so funny. Oh my God, yes. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's disturbing. I've never understood the whole concept of dick pics. Just don't get it.
I don't either, but at least you're able to do something creative with them now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, that's what I'm laughing at. Not the fact that you receive so many, but the fact that you've just like taken that. All right. You want to show that off? Let's show it off,
Let's show it off on a 50-foot IMAX screen. If anything, you should be laughing at the fact that every time I received one, I just forwarded it to Ray. So now Ray has all these unsolicited dick pics.
Brilliant.
If I have to suffer, so do you.
No, that is fantastic. I love that so much.
That's cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, and social media, it's like this, it's a beautiful thing that we can feel so connected to people that we've never actually met. And then at the same time, where it gets a little muddy is that it creates parasocial relationships where we feel entitled to people's space and entitled to people's lives, who in actuality, we're seeing a curated version and we're not actually as close to them as we might think. And sometimes those boundaries are, we all have different handles on boundaries themselves. Yeah. And not everyone is super clear on them.
Well, no, exactly. And I think that, people do assume that because you put little snapshots of your life, and sometimes those snapshots aren't even that accurate, that they know you, and that's just not the case, and they do think that they have an entitlement to a part of you, it's a very, very real problem, and it does get worse and worse. And I try to, because I've got a public profile on my Instagram, but like I try not to engage too much in comments. I'll like a comment if it's like nice and not bothersome, but like that's kind of it, unless I personally know the person, I'll respond then. But like otherwise I kind of limit it, because I don't want to, not going into it, but I've had someone stalk me on Instagram, found me through Instagram and started stalking me, and it's fucking awful. And you feel so invaded. It's like, what, I shouldn't feel like I can't live my life just because I have an internet account. That's crazy pants. It's ridiculous. So I think those kinds of things unfortunately are not uncommon, and I think that this is where the film, it has a lot of levity to it and a lot of funness to it, 100%, but like there is actually a real gravity in there that I think that a lot of people, women and men, and but particularly women, I think will relate to. And I think it's a film that's going to make people feel heard,
I hope. So that's a huge compliment.
Yeah, I mean, I did. I'm laughing and joking along, going, yeah, get him, and blah, blah, blah. But also at the same time, I'm just like, yeah, I feel you, girl. That's me.
I'm sorry, but thank you.
No. Yeah. But it's great, again, because, the internet is so wonderful for empowering people and in a good way, and you know, and bringing people together so that they can talk about shared experiences and stuff like that. And sort of relating as well to Renfield, you know, when which you were also in, that came out this year. And if anyone hasn't seen it, what are you doing? It's fucking great.
Get on it.
This is the Nicolas Cage Dracula movie that we're talking about now.
Yes. I mean, what's not lots of love about that? And you play Carol, who is in a support group for toxic relationships and things. And
Codependence Anonymous.
Codependence Anonymous. And your character is very kind of like resistant and, you know, just sort of has this very, like, I don't know, I think, I don't know if it's because like I've now met you, I'm like, Carol, you know?
Thank you.
You know, she has this perception that she doesn't deserve love, and she has this real self-hatred, and it's kind of playful love, that you're, you know, the lines are very sarcastic, they're very dry, and that is very much my humor, but at the same time there's this very kind of undercutting sadness, and it's like, oh Carol, oh, be okay.
Thank you.
Poor Carol.
You know, yeah.
Thank you.
So I, how is that? Like, because obviously you've come from kind of like, you know, lower budgeted films and like, whereas obviously kind of probably a very kind of close-knit community, as you're saying, you know, on Faces After Dark there was a lot of queer and LGBTQ people and a lot of people with like lots of similarities in that way, and then you go to like a film like Renfield, which is a huge mainstream film, and it's Universal and it's this and it's that, and you've got Nick Cage and you've got Nicholas Holt and you've got, you know, everyone in it. What's that like, going from one to the other like that?
Yeah, I mean, I have the privilege, honor, whatever you want to call it, joy of going back and forth quite often between the two. I mean, well, I'll give an example after this, but to answer the question, I mean, I think there's a lot to learn from both worlds, because there's a lot of freedom on these big budget films where, you know, you have money and you have time and you have resources and you have an army of people, and every single person has a very specialized job that they're handling. And that's incredible. And you don't have that on an indie film. But then at the same time, on an indie film, if someone wants to try something different, there's much more creative control, and you don't have to kind of go up the chain of command. And so there's more freedom in some ways and less freedom in other ways. And I think there's a lot to learn from both.
Both sides,
And I really genuinely enjoy going back and forth between the two worlds, because I think there are certain things that you can only accomplish in one world or the other. But I mean, talk about whiplash. I mean, we filmed Terrifier, and I rapped. It was, you know, a crew of people I could count on one hand, because the second movie, they had a little more money, and you know, it already had a following, it already had this entire, you know, movement, I mean, behind it.
We got a cinematic release. I mean, we had it showing in our you know, in our cinemas in England, and we were like, because of like, you know, horror representation and stuff, and but also the little guy, you know.
Right. And all of the people who got involved in the second movie, they knew, all those actors knew they were stepping into an established franchise. Mm-hmm. Whereas the first one, none of us thought anyone was going to see that movie. We were just doing it for the love of the game. You know, it was like a rough experience. I mean,
did Catherine Coulter think the same? Did she? Was she like, yeah, I'll do that. No one's going to see it. It's going to be fine.
Oh, no, she does. We've talked about this on panels together. She and I are still very close. We've talked together on panels about this, where Terrifier, they had to work around Catherine and my schedules, because both of us were on our first studio films at the same time. And so they were working around us, basically, because we were the big fish in that scenario, not huge fish. Thank you for keeping me humble, Ralphie. I appreciate that. But, you know, at the time, we already had things on our resume and we'd been working for a long time. So, like, I wrapped on Terrifier and I flew home. Literally 24 hours later, I was on set for Bye Bye Man, which was, you know, like an $8 to $10 million feature. And so even though that was smaller than Renfield, it was still like, I have a trailer. Oh, there's hot food. Oh, there's, you know, like there's this entire team of people, and they pick you up and they drop you off. And like, you know, you're in a hotel instead of Phil, the producer's guest room, you know, like, and so I valued a lot from both experiences, but they're very, very different.
Yeah.
Are you surprised at how Terrifier's taken off now?
Yes.
Yeah. I personally, I'm more of a fan of the first one than the second.
Thank you. You don't have to say that just because
he said this on the show and everything before. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
I was a really big fan of the first one, and you know, just because it ticks all my boxes. Cool. But then, I mean, as the second one came in, people were like, oh yeah, okay, oh I'm not gonna watch it. And then it just suddenly, bam, it just suddenly went into all the cinemas, and it's just taken off. You know, is Art the Clown like the new Michael Myers, blah blah blah, the new Jason, etc. etc. But it's just literally exploded, hasn't it?
Because you were saying it's as well, like it was like the number one pre-order on Amazon or something, was that?
Crazy.
Yeah. It's one of those films that like you can't help but talk about it. I haven't seen the second one yet. I will watch it because I feel like it's a prominent enough, because we always do like an end of year review show where we go through like our top 10 and things. And I feel like if I haven't seen Terrifier 2, given how like pertinent it was this year, then I'd probably be doing it.
Yeah, I mean, whether or not you like it, you'll have an informed opinion. I went ahead and watched it purely because I knew that people were going to ask me about it. So I did watch it.
Yeah, I've seen the bedroom scene. And it had me laugh. It had me howling. Like it was just so like over the top. And
it's that. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's they're basically different. To me, they're just different movies. Like the first one is this gritty, campy 80s throwback, like tight 80 something minute slasher. And the second one is something else. second one is like, it's more fantasy. It's more drama. It still has violence and gore, but it's got lore. It's just a different film.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm interested to see it.
And it's not a tight 80 minutes. It's
no,
like
I've heard.
Three fucking days long.
Oh, it is. What, 2 hours and a quarter?
It's very long.
It was too long, actually.
That was your main critique on it, wasn't it?
I tend to agree, and I'm not talking smack behind anyone's back. I've said this to Damien's face. He and I are also still close. So, you know, I think unless you're doing a remake of Lord of the Rings, I don't know why it needs to be. But hey, you know,
art I think
is subjective, like I said.
Are you going to be involved in the third one?
Or I have no idea. I genuinely don't know. I've
been hearing in the second. Is that right?
No, you see photos of me in the second one, but I'm not actually in it. Okay. There are. I've heard rumors. Who knows? I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I'm not being coy. We'll see.
Got, like a load of stuff coming up. You know, like
I do.
Got like the stuff with Face Stuff Stuff and all of that release and things. And sorry, because you mentioned before about it's going to have some like cinematic showings and things and some more like festivals in New York and things. When is it going to have like a wider release, like as in England?
I don't think it'll have a cinematic release, but I do imagine it might show again in England. I'm not sure, but I do know that it will be on streaming services.
Yeah. Okay.
No, theatrically.
Shudder UK. I don't know if you know this. Shudder UK compared to Shudder US is a fucking joke. So
really?
Is that different? Oh, it'd be like, coming up in October, and there'll be like a whole Rolodex of stuff for US, and there'll be like three titles for England.
No joke.
That's not an exaggeration. So if it's going on,
I'm so sorry.
So rude. And these charges
are unacceptable.
So yeah, if it goes to Shudder or anything, fucking Shudder, don't you dare screw us over on this. Like,
I'm not sure what streaming service it'll be on yet, but I'll post about it whenever we find out. I do theatrically next year. I'm going to be in Bad Boys 4.
You're kind of veering away from horror with some of your projects, aren't you?
I kind of go back and forth. I'm also going to be doing a drama, dramedy in a couple months. I mean, I kind of go back and forth. I mean, I love horror, don't get me wrong, but I'm very grateful that I don't stay in it all the time. I kind of like dipping around into other genres. I'm doing a horror comedy in January, I believe. So I've got a bunch of stuff coming up. An action comedy that short that I directed comes out next year.
Spray Bottle.
So yeah, I kind of go back and forth.
Is that Spray Bottle you're on about?
Spray Bottle, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I saw the trailer, it looks really fun. I didn't realize it was only a short though. It really has like it looks like it could be a full feature length. Like it gave that energy.
Thank you. So, well, the idea is to hopefully get it made into a feature. It'll premiere at a festival next year as a short, and then I've already written the feature version, and so we're using the short to promote the feature. But yeah, I do. Oh, I also have an action movie called Tiger Bones that I'm doing next year that I'm one of the two leads in. So yeah, I mean, it's not been intentional. I still love horror, and I imagine I'll come back to it my entire life. But that being said, I have been enjoying doing a lot of this action stuff because I always do my own stunts, and so that's been a very fun thing to play with and to use.
Who needs Tom Cruise when you've got Jenna Connell, right?
I mean,
because that must be a real appeal for like directors and producers. Like, oh, we don't have to get an extra stunt person. Like, you know, that's saving us money and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to pay for another person, but then on top of that, you can be much more creative with camera angles if you're not having to hide somebody's face.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that, I mean, I'm kind of being glib, but genuinely, like, you know.
No, you're not. I mean, it's just logistically true. And I'm 5'4" and I have a shaved head. So I don't even know how you would find somebody to double me anyway. Unless you find a very athletic small boy.
So it all works out. You really do suit the buzz cut, to be fair. Like, not many people can pull that off. I feel like, like, I don't want to.
Thank you.
Like, talking, especially after watching Faces After Dark, don't want to be talking about your appearance or anything, or putting like it down. So we at Fright Fest, we met first time in the bathroom. And
yeah, very normal place to meet.
And I walked out, I was like, you're an idiot, because you probably don't remember, but I said to you, like, oh, I'm about to watch your film, as though any other film is playing. Like, of course I'm going to be watching your film. And like,
I probably had to pee so bad that was my main focus.
I mean, that's fair. Yeah.
Who's this weird girl?
And also, if it makes you feel any better, you were not the only person to talk to me in the bathroom that weekend.
Okay.
Pretty much every time I went.
I mean, at least it wasn't as dumb as me making penis comments at your co-host.
Jason McDonald.
And I was just like, oh, I bet I recognize you if you were naked. And I was like, oh
my God, that's amazing. He did not tell me about that. That's fantastic.
You were there. You were there. And I ran off. Yeah. Like I was, yeah. He,
oh geez,
it was a crazy weekend.
No, honestly. Oh, don't even worry. So we recently interviewed the Addams family, who I also met, and I had
I'm about to meet them. They're coming to our the Faceless After Dark screening in New York, so I'm really excited to meet them.
Nice.
That's I loved Hellbender is amazing.
Oh right, do you listen to their stuff on Spotify? Because they're Hellbender, the band. So they have a band called Hellbender, and it's all the music from that. And they have all the music from their films and other stuff.
I was talking about the movie that they made.
No, the music out. Yeah, the movie is I just meant like if you like the movie and you like the music, the band is also called Hellbender. But all the E's are sixes. But yeah, they're like the nicest. But yeah, I met Toby and John and Lulu again. At another festival a couple months later, and I'd met them once, interviewed like this, FaceTimed another time, and then met them again, and Toby didn't remember me at all. So don't feel bad. She was like, "Hi, I'm Toby," and I was just like, "No, I know we've met twice, but it's all good."
It happens. I've definitely done that before. I've had it done to me before. I mean, blame it on the long COVID. I don't know.
I'm never offended. It just makes me laugh. But no, I said to the guy, I'm so sorry. What's his name? Jason. I was like the taxi guy. I was like, you're a someone too, kind of thing. And I felt so bad because I was like, I know that you're in this film figure out who you are, and
that's so funny.
But I didn't want to be an asshole and just not talk to the guy. And then
he was like,
I'm just not tied up to a bed. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm sure if you were naked, I'd recognize you. Because I just have no filter.
You should become the next pickup artist. I think that's flawless. A flawless approach.
Oh, thank you.
10 points.
I think.
No, that's funny. I love that.
Oh, yeah. Good so I don't know how anyone reacted because I sped out of there pretty quick before I could gauge anyone. I just screamed, sorry!
At like, I love his that.
Face and then ran. And probably
the best way to exit any conversation, and then you don't have to deal with the fallout.
Yeah, no, I've exited a lot of scenarios where I've just screamed in someone's face, going "really sorry," and then run off. More than I care to admit, I'm just a very awkward kind of person. So I just want to ask you very, very quickly.
Yeah,
and you know, some might say that this is the most important question.
Ooh,
just real quick, what was it like working with Nick Cage? I have to ask. I'm sorry. I don't know anyone who's
married. Don't apologize. Don't apologize. It was amazing. I mean, he's so incredibly talented. Nick Cage is unbelievable to watch. Like he's so cool. I mean, Nick Holt is incredibly talented.
Yeah.
Chris McKay, the director, gave us so much freedom. I mean, Chris Brewster, the stunt coordinator. I mean, everyone involved is amazing. When the two Nicks were acting opposite one another, I had to remind myself that I was on camera because I was so enraptured just watching them. And it felt like I was just watching a masterclass in performance art. And I had to remind myself, oh, I'm also on camera. I need to be acting right now. Because it was like, Nick Cage is so, like, Nick Cage would be, you know, he's in his velvet suit and he's got his acrylics on and he's got all the makeup and the teeth. And he would just be in between takes in a director's chair in the corner, just hissing at no one, like, like a cat.
Brilliant.
And we met at the table read. They put me next to him at the table read. And when I found that out, as I was walking in, I promptly shit myself and then tried to keep it cool and probably failed. So don't feel bad about your naked comment, because I'm sure I was not cool at all. But my friend Keith Brooks, who's in the movie, he's amazing. He's so talented. He plays one of the ska guys at the beginning.
Oh,
he was introducing me to Josh Michael, who is another one of the ska guys. He was introducing me to him at the table read. He was talking about how my cat, who passed this year, which has been a nightmare, which is why it's great. I'm borrowing another one in my lap right now. Thank you. But she was unbelievably smart and I had taught her how to do tricks. And so Keith was bragging about that. And I didn't think Nick Cage was listening, because why would he be listening to my conversation as I'm just gushing about how talented my cat is? And she could sit, she could turn in a circle, she could do high fives,
right? Yeah.
High five. Yeah, she could play fetch. And then all of a sudden I just hear from my right, oh, that's really impressive. It made me so happy.
I was going to say,
that's so then we talked about our cats.
Anything else happens?
That's exactly what I thought. We proceeded to talk about our cats. And after that, I was like, you know what? I think I'm ready to retire. This is it.
Yeah,
this is
it. All done.
I peaked. Yeah.
Next door to where I go to college, there is a pub called The Three Tuns. And you know how on the outside, at least in British pubs, you have like the Queen's head or in the little kind of picture.
Sure. But
it's Nick Cage.
Is it?
Yeah. And they have a cardboard cutout of Nick Cage waving from the window. And he went there one New Year's, didn't tell anyone, just turned up and bought the entire pub drinks all night.
I love that.
Actual fucking legend.
He's so talented. He's very strange, which made me happy because I was hoping he would be strange in real life.
The hype.
Absolutely. And Nick Holt is also just like an absolute gem. He was so sweet. He came up to me at the table read and told me that he thought my audition was really good.
Oh,
like, why was he watching my audition? Awesome. Nobody knows. But it was just
whatever he thought. It was really good. Cool. Yeah, he's lovely. Awesome. I remember seeing him when he was like a little kid and about a boy and stuff, and just like, it's been so great watching that career develop. He's very, very
talented. Well, and so many people who start out that young don't turn out as well adjusted and he's kind and humble and generous. Like, he'd be reading, you know, for us even when he was off camera. Like, so many child stars don't turn out that way. So it's really inspiring to watch artists like that.
That's so lovely. I will stop talking about Nick Cage because it's not his interview. He can wait.
He's on the next episode.
Yeah, he can wait. But I just had to ask. You don't get these opportunities very often.
Of course. No, my gosh.
But yeah, I think that that's kind of all my questions and stuff. Matt, did you have anything else that you wanted to?
I don't think so. No, just awesome to talk to you and just, you know.
Thank you.
Get you insight insight into the film and everything. Yeah, it's been great.
This film was it was absolutely one of my favorites from the festival. And
thank you.
I went, because sometimes, you know, when you go watch a film at a festival and you're like, oh, you know, is it the atmosphere and like the hype, and they're there and it's all like, oh, and then you watch it at home, you're like, oh, I should not have hyped that up so much. That wasn't the case here at all. Like I think I even liked it more because, as I said, it's one of those things where you know, now I know what's kind of where it goes and what happens and stuff. I can pay attention to all the little bits, and I was able to kind of rewind and, you know, and like, don't look at double step. I'm like, hey, is that, did I just see, you know, and
yeah, oh, I like that.
Oh, is that my dick?
Yeah. Exactly.
Wait a minute. I know it anywhere.
Maybe you could see it.
Maybe you could see anything else. Takes up the whole screen.
Ew, Matt's dick, guys.
Start the rumor that Kate's dick is canonically large.
That's not a rumor. That is verified fact.
Yes. That is Twitter verified.
To say blue ticks by me.
Yep.
It's a really, really, really excellent film. And thank you so much for coming on today and for being so patient with our inept technical tale.
No worries. Thank you for having me. I mean, this has been a lot of fun. You're both very lovely. It makes me happy that you enjoy the film so much. So I'm really excited for other people to be able to see it.
We're promoting this. So
thank you so much.
I'll obviously let you know when it's out and everything, and I'll pop you an email and stuff. But I'll probably still stalk you a bit on Instagram. Not gonna lie. So
that's the place. Not real life. Instagram is the place.
I was joking. I won't stalk you, I promise. I won't actually stalk you.
Use of the word.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure. Parasocial stuff here going on. yes. Cool. Well, yeah, no, enjoy the rest of your day and going on. And thank you so much for everything.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing your future stuff.
Thank you so much. I'm excited for you to see it.
Oh, cool. Have a lovely day. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. All right.
Take care, Jenna.
I'm not really feeling this line.
What's wrong with the line?
The circus just left town, bitch. How's it going, the movie?
You want to cast a name?
I just don't know why I'm not enough.
Why don't you just make your own shit? You know what they say, write what you know.
Hey, Jeremy, this is from the team telling you that the circus has left town, bitch.
That was our interview with the lovely Jenna Cannell.
It was indeed.
Yeah. Gosh, she was so fucking nice. Oh my God.
Yeah, she was really pleasant. Yeah. No, it was a great interview.
Yeah. Like, I know I know that you were a bit quiet on it, but you've not been very well. And
I was very, very quiet. No, I haven't been well. But it was lovely to get involved in that one.
Yeah, I think, but you are also the type where you do just kind of like to just listen. I talk, you listen. We're well on a podcast.
Yeah, I say nothing.
You say nothing. I mean, you know, it's our brand. No, I'm only joking. No, you haven't. To be honest, like, ideally, I would have liked to have done it a little bit later on. But as you said in the interview, it took us so long to secure a date where we were all free. I was like, it's now or never, guys.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
She was so, so nice. And it was so lovely chatting to her. And I'm genuinely so excited to see what else happens with her career, whether it's horror or not, because she has such a
cool intellect. Yeah, loads of stuff up and coming, you know, in the next year, even just next year.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and the fact that she's so multifaceted in her talents, I think that we're just going to see even better things come. So
yeah, it's great stuff.
Yeah, so if you like that, if you like the interview or anything, or have any comments, please let us know. And as well, I didn't say this on the Adams Family interview, but if anyone's got anything that they want to say about it, please let us know. We'd love to get your feedback. But yeah, so if you are obviously listening to this already, you probably know where to find us, but just in case, we'll let you know. So that is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher shut down, so boo-hoo for that. But but yeah, we've got where are we at as well? Podbean, Podbay, all the usual. So that's cool. And then if you'd like to get involved at all and then interact with us on the socials in a non-stalkery, very respectful, boundary-driven way, but still lots of swearing. And, you know, the occasional dick pic isn't too bad as long as you're attractive.
So. Yeah, stalk me.
So, yeah. Oh, Matt's dying for some solicitation.
Oh, wow, I love a bit of stalker action.
Love it. but yeah, you can find us on Facebook. That's www.facebook.com/groups/Edenism pod. And then that is Instagram. That is @Edenism_podcast. And then our email, if you want to pop us an email, is Email is edenismpodcast@gmail.com. We are coming up to Christmas. We'll have hopefully just before this episode drops, we will have had the Christmas episode come out. I hope you all enjoyed that. But if not, it will be just shortly afterwards. It really depends on my time in these next week or so. I'm trying to fit a lot and not a lot of time, but we'll work on it. So either you've heard the episode or you haven't, and it's about to come out.
Yeah.
Either way, enjoy. But yeah, that is it from us. We're going to get out of here. And thanks very much for coming.
Bye.
Bye.